The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
Across the southeast, you are listening to Beat, and my first guest on the Sunday Grill this morning did something we all dream about at one time or another. Tricia Hutton is from County Carlow, and she packed up her things and moved to a far off land over 18 hours away, in fact, on a plane, and she did it with her teenage son. And Tricia joins me on the Sunday Grill this morning to tell us more. You're very welcome, Tricia.
Hi, Orla. How are you? Thanks a million for having me on.
The proud owner of Ranchos that I was having a look at on Instagram. We'll talk about that later because you're having a pug event that we'll have to talk about as well.
And you it's going to be ridiculous.
I love ridiculous, Tricia. I love ridiculous. But first, where do we start with this? Would it be fair to say that you were midlife and felt you wanted to see more of the world, or what was going on with you when you decided to make this big move? And we must say what country you left to go to. You went to Japan.
I did go to Japan. It would be absolutely fair to say midlife, but it would be fair to say lots of other things too. Like, it wasn't long after COVID.
Okay.
I'm a teacher. I had always planned, once my child was in transition year, okay, I was always like, yay, transition year. So like when he was starting junior infants, I was like, right, once he's in transition year, that's it. We're going to live abroad. I don't care what's happening.
Oh,
and then like, do you remember how nuts the world went?
Yes.
Like then I think for his, I was trying to remember, I think it was his second and third year of in the Gael Colosta.
Mm-hmm.
We were all in lockdown.
Okay.
So we spent those 2 years. I'm a school teacher and educate together. And we had those 2 years, right, where were we in the house. And I mean, it was kind of, you know, we were doing bits and bobs, but the frustration was real.
Oh,
and
was
so
awful.
By the end of it, I was like, I just was, you know, I was 47. I was heading into another, hopefully 50 or 60 years. And I thought, I don't want to do 50 or 60 years here. I need an adventure.
Okay.
So I was going to do Paris. Like, I had all these notions about I was going to be sitting outside the Champs-Élysées on a Saturday morning, having a cigarette and a coffee, eat the baguette. It was going to be gorgeous. And Rowan said to me, under no circumstances am I leaving my friends to go to Paris. He had zero interest in Paris.
This is what happens.
Yeah.
Okay. So how did you convince him of Japan?
I didn't do any convincing at all. He was obsessed with kind of Japanese anime and manga, which
brilliant.
I think is terribly typical of teenagers.
Okay.
I think it's huge now worldwide. I didn't actually, this sounds ridiculous, but I didn't realize how big it is in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, look, he had kind of started learning bits of Japanese and stuff as well. I said, well, what about if I go to Japan? Because the truth is, I didn't really care where I went. I just wanted an adventure.
Okay.
So he said, yeah, if you go to Japan, that's fine. So I just
started
ball
rolling. And what were you thinking, Tricia? Because, you know, TY is a very exciting time. Were you thinking you'd take him out for the whole of the year or just a few months and let him go back to his pals? What were you thinking?
No, the whole of the year. That was the original plan, was he'd go to school for a year. I would teach on some level in some English-speaking school for a year. And I don't worry too much about reality. I'm just like, oh, I think this is what I want to do. Let's do it. So I don't really think about the details much.
That's a good way to think, I think. And tell me, I was only talking about Japan recently with a friend of mine who had visited there. The world is so globalized that places like Japan have that completely different look and feel that you would expect from other countries 20 and 30 years ago.
Yeah, it's a real mix. Like, I mean, there were so many culture shocks, but one of the biggest was how 1980s a lot of it is. Like,
really?
The image I had of Japan was kind of sci-fi stuff.
Mm.
You know, I was like, robots serving your food in cafes and stuff.
Yeah.
And that does exist, but it also is an extremely traditional country.
Okay.
Like, so, like, I think the most practical example I can give is the ATM doesn't work before 7 a.m. or after 11 p.m. So if you try and take money out before 7 a.m., you get a little Japanese slip. And when you Google Translate it, it says, you are trying to use this bank outside of banking hours. So, and cash, everywhere takes cash.
Okay.
You know, like everywhere, it's different in the cities, but it is terribly traditional.
And where did you live? When you got to Japan the first time, did you stay where you lived for the 3 years?
Yeah. Yeah. So in fairness, I had lined everything up. Like, it would take a lot to move there. Well, you couldn't do it. They wouldn't let you move there unless you had everything lined up. Like,
okay,
they're quite strict.
Right.
And they're getting stricter, actually, about even tourists and stuff. because it's such a popular country. But yeah, I had lined everything up and I knew where I was going, you know. So like the school, you know, we did 3 or 4 nights in Tokyo before the school moved us to our apartments in Nagoya. So in that kind of a way, it was much easier. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's, well, obviously it is because people do it. I'm not clever enough or brave enough to move there without the support of knowing I had a job who was lining up my apartment and my car. So, and then you've got the language barrier.
Imagine.
It's crazy, or, you know, it's really an incredible way to live your life.
Really,
I think
is.
That international teaching.
And what about your son and his Japanese? Because he went to school there. So did he become fluent in Japanese?
He didn't become fluent.
Okay.
No, he certainly learned an awful lot more Japanese than me.
Okay, because it's a very difficult language, I'd say.
Yeah, it's one of those languages that I met several people over there who were like married to Japanese people and who had been studying Japanese for 20 years and they wouldn't call themselves fluent.
Okay. And how did you end up staying the 3 years in the end?
So we went up. So, I mean, it was a kind of a snowball thing. I realized once I started applying for jobs that a 1 year contract can't really be gotten over there because it's quite expensive for the school to bring out. So they said 2 years. So I talked to Owen again. I said, oops, we have to stay for 2 years if I go. And I was like, fine. But then just logistically, like, to come back after 2 years, Rowan would have been at the end of fifth year.
Okay.
And the Leaving Cert is a 2 year cycle, you know? And we were absolutely loving it. Like, I can't tell you how much we were loving it.
Oh,
like, we both were really living our best lives.
And so are you very close then? That was just the 2 years, or did it make you closer?
No, we're definitely closer now. I mean, I suppose we were always pretty close, but we're definitely closer. You know, I suppose I'm very privileged in that I got to see his kind of very formative teenage years with just him and I in a really quiet environment, both going through quite a significant lifetime event, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he's much, you know, I mean, he's very different to me. He's very calm and quiet and he just kind of took it all in his stride and he made wonderful friends.
Wow.
And I was like, he used to go nuts because as soon as I would wake up, I'd want to go and see something. Like I wouldn't be, I wouldn't be awake. Like my eyelids wouldn't be open. And I was saying, oh man, I heard about this temple that's 300 kilometers away. Come on, get in the van and we'll go. And he needs kind of 2 days notice before he goes anywhere, you know.
And what happened with his Leaving Cert and stuff? Did he do an exam over there in Japan, an equivalent exam?
Yeah. So the school that he went to is an IB school, an international baccalaureate, and that's worldwide.
So he has the baccalaureate.
So he has the IB, like the baccalaureate. He finished high school with that.
Okay. So you're back.
We're back.
Running a dog
cafe. Next big adventure. So the next big adventure is learning to settle down. That's what I said to Owen after I got home. I was like, now I have to learn to settle down. But
you're such
I
an inspiration, though, because I think we have this idea, maybe it's an Irish thing, that you do all your travelling in your 20s, then you settle down and that's it. Whereas travelling is for everyone and not just travelling, like going to a weekend somewhere or backpacking, actually going and living and working somewhere. Anyone can do that.
Yeah.
But something stops us, doesn't it?
Something stops us. And it's funny because, like, you know, I had traveled a lot in my 20s.
Mm.
But this is to travel somewhere like Japan, or maybe you could argue anywhere, for 2 weeks, it's very difficult to see anything. I mean, the culture shock in Japan is huge.
Yeah,
you know, so
love it.
It took me until the second year before I got used to stuff.
Yeah.
So
imagine.
Like when I was going to go that far, I was always going to commit to it. I was always going to kind of jump both feet in. And I'm glad that I did. And I'm glad after the second year, I would say I was getting used to the scenery and the temples and stuff. But the third year was when I kind of felt like I was starting to understand their culture a little.
Oh, wow.
You know? It's not like you can go for 2 weeks and, you know, kind of experience. You can see lots of Japanese things, but I think you very much will be on the outside of them looking in, you know.
Of course.
Whereas when you're living there and you're in the school and you kind of accidentally come across different bits and bobs. Like we ended up, I was just talking to someone recently about this. We ended up firewalking on New Year's Eve in a temple 1 year, which was completely, like, it was just off the charts nuts. But
now you're back with your partner, Owen,
back.
And his dog-friendly cafe named in his name, Rancho Riley's.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's just, of course, dog cafes are huge in Japan, you know?
Okay.
And that's where I was, the whole time I was there, their dogs are like incredible. Like they bring their dogs in little buggies and the buggies have fans and stuff. And yeah, they completely, like all of the dogs are dressed. And quite often we met people who had matching outfits to their dogs and matching sunglasses. And it's incredible. So the whole time I was there, I was like, oh man, this is the future. Like I want to do something when I get home with dogs. So Owen already had the cafe here. He runs a campsite during the summer. It was closed for the winter.
Okay.
And I was like, hey, can I borrow your cafe for the summer and run a little dog cafe? So
and
we're
it's
doing
going well.
It and it's great fun. Oh, it's so much
and you
fun.
Can
it's
book
just
out
Saturdays
a little,
and Sundays.
And you can just book out a little area as well if you want your dogs to
you
have
want
quiet time on their own and be free on their own as well.
Be off leash. There's a little room where they can be off leash if they want, and then they can come into the cafe. There's a big stove and they sit in front of the stove. They're gorgeous. I love them.
Fab.
So it's so sweet. So it's every Saturday and Sunday.
Every Saturday and Sunday, Rancho Riley's just outside Carlow Town, really in Great Cullen. Is that where you said it is?
It's in Great Cullen.
In Great
Cullen.
Very good.
It's not far from Carlow.
And then you're having a pug. Yeah, go on.
Yeah. It's going to be so much fun. The Kilkenny Pug Society. I did not
fab.
Know that was a thing.
Oh, no, I've interviewed them before. Yeah, they're very passionate.
Have you?
Yes, yes.
They're brilliant. So they contacted me, and the last pug meetup they had it was in Kilkenny Castle.
Yes.
And now they want to know this Sunday, can they have one in Rancho?
Amazing. Okay, so tell us
we're
for anyone.
Prizes for the best dressed pug and
everything. And what time is that going to be on, Tricia, if people want to head to it?
So it's about 1 o'clock
about
in the afternoon.
Okay.
I'll be open 10 till 4, but about 1, I think, is when they're planning on having all of the pugs here. They're going to go for a walk together. We'll do a little parade.
Oh, fab.
It'll be so sweet.
How
it'll be
fab.
Such a laugh.
So Rancho's Dog Friendly Cafe is the Instagram to check that out. If you have a pug or even don't have a pug but would like to check out the cafe and how they're dog friendly, you'll find them on Instagram there. Thank you for talking to us on the Sunday Grill this morning. What a life experience. 3 years. That was meant to be a year. But 3 years, and you are such an example of all those different things that you had going on at home, because we get to an age and we end up with lots of responsibilities, but you made it happen. So fair play to you.
Throw it all in the air.
Throw
and
it all in the air. Thanks a million, Tricia.
Thanks a million, Orla.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
Sunday morning, you're listening to Beat, and it's starting to get real for the Pando people around the country. And Jack and the Beanstalk, the tale of magic beans at SETU in Waterford is no different. It has a host of Southeast celeb stars in the show, along with Danny O'Carroll of Mrs. Brown's Boys fame. Wexford's Sharon Calancy joins us to tell us about her role in the Panto. Let me say that again.
Clancy and Panty. That's good.
There
that's
you go.
Perfect. My
I should be in a panto myself.
Here you go, Richie. That's it for next year.
Hey, all my dreams have come true. Wexford's Sharon Clancy joins us to tell us about her role in the panto, and Richie Hayes is also with us to tell us about all those Southeast stars, which include himself, of course. Richie, I will talk to you in a second, because you are the man who can tell us about all those Southeast stars, and one of those is Sharon, of course.
Yeah, the Wexford girl herself.
That's it, Sharon.
Hello.
Clancy. Hello, you are the evil Baroness Felicia.
Oh, indeed I am. I think it's pure, like, you know, I'm not taking it personally or anything being typecast. I'm just having the most wonderful time. Rehearsals are flying it. I think of all the pantos and professional shows I've done, because I've been in the West End for 13 years doing like 1 year contracts and Mamma Mia and She's a Great Superstar and lots of really, really amazing shows, mm-hmm. to come back to Waterford, because I found my footing doing shows with Richie and those wonderful people in Waterford many moons ago. So it's actually wonderful, like, just to be back home, my second home, really.
So tell us about the evil Baroness. Tell us, has she a little backstory? Has she had some trauma that's making her evil?
Oh, look it. I think she's just a woman scorned. She's power hungry. She's just obsessed with looking fabulous. Now, I tell you what, I'm still trying to work on that. but plenty of makeup and tight fitting clothing. No, it's really fun. I think she just got lost along the way. And she's just, you know, she wants this power. She's obsessed with like finding all the like the portals, the different areas, how she can take over Daisheville. And so she's managed to take control of the giant. I don't want to give too much away.
No, don't.
But she's married to Mayor Steve, okay. Which is Jamie Dornan, and he's wonderful. But he's like, he's poor guy, just downtrodden. And she's out for power. She wants to take over everything.
And Daisheville, I like it. Is it nice in Daisheville?
Oh, it's a beautiful place, because I'm there. there's lots of those lines, Orla. So it is actually beautiful. And I think that's why she just loves it. Gosh, I wonder, is it a Sharon Clancy backstory? I'm
Maybe
not sure.
It is.
But it is, and she just wants to have all the power. And they talk about like making Daisheville great again. So there's lots of nods to, not too political at all, but there's some just little touches of nods, sprinkles of pixie dust.
Excellent.
Throughout the show that a lot of the adults will enjoy as well.
As you would expect from a panto, obviously. Now, Richie, look, when it comes to the Southeast, like Wexford and Waterford and Carlow, they're so well known for their musical theatre and theatre in general. And like, I'm just looking at the list. Sharon already mentioned Jamie Drone. There's so many people from around the Southeast in the show, isn't there?
We have a great cast, and it's a massive opportunity because, we export as the counties, and I include Waterford and Wexford and the other surrounding. We export so much of our talent up the country to the bigger cities, and be it Cork or Dublin, Limerick, you know, and so on, and so on, and off into the UK as well, because sadly, there's not enough professional work around the area that we live in this country. So a big part of that was I always wanted to be able to come home and work at home and earn a living, you know. And, for Panto is one of the biggest earners for theatres, and it's their main income for the year, both in Ireland and the UK. And for actors and performers of all sorts, Panto is the biggest employee of the year on the theatrical scene. And that's, I'm not getting into the musical theatre side in London or anything like that, but you know, as a country, we don't have big productions like, you know, your Little Shop of Horrors, which is a homegrown production with Borgosh this year, but that's new, and hopefully that will go on and on and on. So getting back to the Pantoland world, it is so great to be able to have work for people and keep them at home and keep them in the area, and for us not to have to travel. And then for the audiences, they don't have to travel anymore either now too. And like, I got a phone call yesterday from a lady who is up in kind of North County Leash, and she said, we usually go to Dublin, but we're going to come down to Waterford now, she said, because it's easier access. It's a cheaper option,
away.
But the show is going to be every bit as good. And, you know, going through the cast, Jamie Drone, who is, you know, the face of Wintervale over the last few years, and is a childhood friend of mine. And I said, you know what, I think you need to get into Pantoland. So we've literally lifted Jamie. Anybody that's been at Wintervale would have met Jamie over the years.
Course,
even
on
they
his
don't
train.
Realize they have, you know, he's a bit larger than life in every way.
And tell me about your title role of Jack and Evan O'Hanlon, because his CV is very impressive.
Evan is an old student, or a young student of the Richie Hay Stage School. He started with me at 5 years of age, and when he was, I think, 10 or 11, we brought him to Dublin. We brought a load of our students to Dublin for what was the Olympia Panto, starting off there then with Jedward and all of that.
Oh, yeah.
And he got us. And so he went to Dublin from, his mum and dad brought him to Dublin every Christmas. He's on the Late Late Show through that then, because the same producers that do the Olympia Panto actually produce a lot of the stuff for the Thai Show as well. So he's featured on the Thai Show as a young chap. And then he got Moon Boy. He played the altar boy in one of the episodes. And he just went from strength to strength. Wow. And at 15 years of age, he moved to Dublin and did dance college there, and then he got his bachelor's to go to, or sorry, he got to go to London and train over there, and he's since then, since he's kind of come home after that, he's done movies with Disney. He's in Disenchanted 2, and he's played the lead boy after a number of years as a dancer in Limerick, where I've been for the last 13 years, and then he played lead boy. So he's really come full circle. But he's 26, 27, when I was on his birthday the other day. He's like another son to me, but it's just so great to see him now coming back home. And like, his mom is just so happy that he's home for Christmas. You know, Holly Ryan is another girl from Waterford who lives in London many, many years. She's 20, you know, in her late 20s, and she's just back off a cruise ship, and she's home. She said, I've never been home so long. over Christmas. I remember when I met her mom on the street, she said, I can't believe, she had tears in her eyes. She said, I can't believe my daughter's going to be home.
And then 45 young performers as well from around the region, really, from theatre groups and things like that, are going to be on stage too.
Yeah, there's been an explosion of stage schools over the years. You know, I had my one for 10 years. Sharon has her one in Wexford. Like a lot of people, because it's a natural progression for a lot of people when they kind of start coming away from the real, like, you know, when you're a bit younger and you don't have family ties and stuff, you just go for it all the time. But, you know, to sustain that income and a living from it, the stage school thing is a thing. So with that, again, there isn't many opportunities for people in this neck of the country to be able to experience this kind of level of production, you know. So this year it was very important to me that these kids got an opportunity to see what a professional production entails, because there is a lot of things that are done slightly different, and the way, you know, the way the room is run and the way the show is done, how we approach it all. And look, it's the equivalent to someone getting called up to, you know, county from their club team and stuff like that. And that's what this is for the kids.
Exciting.
And they're having an absolute ball. And we have kids from Wexford, we've kids from Waterford, obviously, but we have one girl is traveling from Limerick all the time well. So it's amazing. And they're from 8 to 12, and then we introduce the teenager element of it as well, from 13 to 16, and then we have 8 full-time dancers. So it's fantastic.
And it's flown in. We were talking about this back in the summer, and yet here we are, we're nearly at that stage. So it's December 19th, is that when it kicks off?
Yeah, we have preview school shows on the 17th and 18th. We still have some availability for on the 1:30 shows. But like, again, we've people travelling up as far as Tipperary into Wexford. They're coming from all over, North Arklow and all of that. So this is really putting a shining light on the South East for us, which was what our plan is. And we have our press night, media night on the 19th, sold out house. And yes, the booking has really kicked off. We have the great Danny O'Carroll, who's a household name on Mrs. Brown's Boys, and very, very lucky to have the likes of him in the show. And he's doing me a very, very big favour. I'm a friend of his since I appeared in the show myself in 2017. So having him there is really putting us on the national press, and that's starting to reflect now. So, well, you know, we have a good run there, and you can book on pantoland.net.
Oh, you're doing my job for me. I was about to start.
Job. You always have to get that. This is not our first rodeo.
No, it's not. December 19th until the 30th, as you said, the 17th and 18th are those school shows. Pantoland.net. Best of luck with it all. Sharon, I can't wait to see you as an evil baroness. You'll be brilliant.
Thank you so much, Orla. And I just like to, can I just give a big shout out to my little boy who's actually 11 today, and he's also in the show. So he's going to be in the pantomime. He's travelling up from Wexford with me.
And, it's a family affair, isn't it?
That's the way to do it, Sharon. No mom guilt there for you.
No, you know, and my son as well. The two of them are, Sharon's son and my son are in the show.
Oh, that's
they're
brilliant.
Actually Daisy the cow.
I hope they're doing their homework during all their downtime. Brilliant.
Yes.
That's great to hear.
Zach.
His name is
thank
Zach.
You.
Happy birthday to Zach, 11 today.
Yes.
Well, listen, Sharon, and listen, Richie, thank you so much for joining us. I know you're really busy as the countdown is truly on for the panto at the SETU Arena. You should know the name by now. It is Jack and the Beanstalk, the tale of magic beans. It's all set in Dacheville. Sharon and Richie, thanks a million.
You're Orla.
Farewell.
Farewell. Fairy godmother in a few years when we're doing Cinderella.
You don't call me, I'll call you.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
Sunday morning, you're listening to Beat and the Sunday Grill, and Spotify has very smartly become part of our Christmas countdown. This week's People's Social Media was awash with Spotify Unwrapped, and it's the year I redeemed myself. Last year was terrible. Niall Odrin from Beat Sport, really, in July he was still slagging me about my Spotify Unwrapped.
Okay.
Kids bops.
Look, you have excuses, you're a mom. I don't have any excuses for my shite.
Oh, tell me.
No, look, I want to start. Can I start with the negatives and the naysayers, right?
Yeah.
This is nothing except a marketing tool for Spotify.
Oh, okay.
And it's a very good one
because
everybody shares it, everybody talks about it, but that's purely what it is. It's not, I don't think it's even you know, very specific data. And in fact, I've seen some people giving out because it's believed that the cutoff point is the end of October. So you're missing two whole months of data in the year. You know that kind of way? You could have an album come out on the 1st of November and you could love it and listen to it over and over again, but it's not going to count. So just remember, it's a marketing tool, but it is fun, apart from nothing else on your Insta stories for 24 hours. I don't care.
And when people have really cool things that they listen to, they're the oversharers. Because I don't want you to know that Ariana Grande's Thank You Next was one of my top songs.
you don't need to know that. So before I get to me and you, right, and the embarrassing stuff, just a couple of the top line Irish stuff. So Taylor Swift was the most streamed artist in Ireland for the third year running. Followed closely by Zach Bryan. Probably that's the gigs, of course, this year as well. Kingfisher at number three. And I just can't believe how big those lads have become. Last year, they were in 21 Beats as an up-and-coming artist here on Beat. And this year, they're the most streamed, or third most streamed artist in Ireland.
And we saw the crowds at Electric Picnic for their gig there.
And then Sabrina Carpenter and Drake made up the rest of the list.
Lily Allen in there.
No, unfortunately not. In terms of songs most streamed, the top three, number three was Pink Pony Club. Number two was Ordinary by Alex Warren. And number one, again, it's Kingfisher with Killa, which of course has been number one for months on end. And then in terms of albums most streamed in Ireland, Sabrina Carpenter was at three. Noah Kahan was at two, despite the fact that album's a couple years old. And number one, another Irish act absolutely nailing it, Amble. The most streamed album.
Yeah, Wexford Connections.
I do love, my artist songs genres are always kind of the same each year. So my artist message for what seems
do I have to open my Spotify? I don't understand it.
I took notes because it takes ages to get through all the pages.
Now, I don't have, the big thing for this year was what age you are compared to music. And they didn't give me that.
It's in there.
It's like they're mortified about me.
My artist message for, I think, the sixth or seventh year in a row was from Kylie Minogue. Does that shock you?
No, it doesn't.
And she was up there at the top of my artists along with Moncrief, Calvin Harris, Disco Lines, all grand. Similar vibe with songs, except in my top five, and I'm a little embarrassed by this.
You don't be embarrassed, because wait till I tell you mine.
Genuine Pony was in there, right?
What's that?
You know, you want it. It's a really sexy song.
Now come on, it's
our theme to Daily's Lemma Uncensored and the live show.
But
and
it's also like when we celebrate you, Niall, whether it is through death or through achievement, that will be your song.
That'll be it.
I have so many videos of you dancing to that.
Yeah, so that's our walk-in song, and I think I must have been practicing at home or something. It's played a lot. Genres, interesting, dance pop is always number one, house music, but then Motown was number three on my list. That's kind of cool, isn't it?
Yeah,
Motown.
That's okay. Why, Niall? Why is that?
I don't know. I love that vibe, I have to say. Okay. I listen to a lot of that kind of stuff. Then a couple of the really interesting, quirky things, right? My age, my listening age, is 56.
Wow.
And that is because I love so much 80s music, they said.
Yeah.
Okay? And I make no apologies for that. Embarrassingly, my top podcast was Beat Breakfast.
Oh, no. I'm
so good. So good. I got to listen back. You know, I kind of review the week and listen to the podcast and all that. But there's other like really interesting, quirky stuff. Like I love the fact they tell you about certain days and what you were doing.
Yes.
And I must have had some crisis on March 27th this year because I spent 151 minutes listening to the music of 1999. In particular, Steps, Britney, S Club and TLC.
Wow.
I did it for nearly 3 hours.
I am actually not surprised by any of those. I really am. Well, I give you some of mine.
Go for it.
Really mortifying. So my top album is Lily Allen, because I really embraced Lily Allen's West End Girl a few months ago and really went for it. But nothing to do with me. Ariana Grande is number two. Cat's Eye is number three. And Six the Musical.
Okay. Six was on Show's list as well.
Yes,
but she went to see it and she loved it.
I went to see it too and loved it. Cat's Eye.
Is that your daughter?
Definitely,
because like I only learned who Cat's Eye were about 2 weeks ago.
I could do all the words to Gnarly if you ask.
I only know Gabriella.
Yeah, so there you go. And then those same albums are the same songs. Thank You Next, Seven Rings, West End Girl, and I can't even mention the name of the other Lily Allen one that I've listened to at length. The really embarrassing thing is the podcast that I listen to, because I like to listen to both sides of the argument. So I got a special message from Piers Morgan thanking.
I mean, it's good to keep, I suppose, your You're stay enlightened with all the viewpoints, but wow.
And then on my birthday, on January 29th, I began my birthday with a marathon of Piers Morgan Uncensored.
Oh, happy birthday, me.
Followed by Pod Save America, so the complete opposite. And then I shifted to a reflective evening of folk and Broadway, listening to Joan Baez, Sarah Bareilles, and a Snow Patrol trio. It's like Snow Patrol.
Wow.
I never
How very 2006.
Yes. And I have to say, nowhere can I find what my age is. So it, maybe not everyone is getting their age.
Or maybe, look, as you said, it's just too embarrassing.
It is such a marketing ploy. It's been happening for 10 years. It really only has it grabbed a hold of us in the last 5 years or so. COVID times, I think, really.
Yeah, and also they started to really add to like all the effects and stuff. So that's a lovely little story
yes,
to watch.
Lovely.
You know?
And in 2023, Spotify Wrapped, the hashtag, had 73.7 billion views on TikTok.
So it works.
Like, it works for them. Mm. It really does. And yeah. I'm mortified for myself. In a nice way, though. Mm. I'm also mortified for you, Niall Power.
Well,
thank you very much.
I'm going
for
back to March 27th, some steps on the way.
For January, I'm hoping that you listen to a lot of classical music and maybe not your own podcast. And let's have a different.
Broaden your horizons,
Spotify
Niall.
Unwrapped 2026. That is Niall Power from Beat Breakfast. He will be back on Beat Breakfast with show from 7 a.m. tomorrow morning. Thanks so much.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
Five counties, one station. You are listening to Beat, and I love an old historical drama. So I think I love the choral. I think it'll be right up my street. Set in World War One, and with their choir master joining the army, a choral group in the Yorkshire town of Ramsden decides to take a chance on appointing a choir master who is fond of German culture, not a great thing during World War One Britain, an atheist, and also a gay man. Now, that man is Dr. Henry Guthrie. He's played by Ralph Fiennes. Lots of recognisable faces. I don't know if recognisable names, but lots of Downton Abbey type recognisable actors in this. Let's have a listen. And then Odrin, whose face is giving away his feelings, will tell us what he thought.
Joining up?
I feel it's my patriotic duty.
We'll need a new chorus master.
I hope he puts the wind up the Germans more than he ever did the Sopranos.
Dr. Guthrie.
Oh.
What?
He's been working in Germany.
Treachery.
He's an atheist.
There are atheists now. There's one in Bradford.
I heard his Mozart Requiem.
So did I. It was wonderful.
I'd like to hear the chorale, O Haupt voll Blut und Wunden.
For God's sake, man, rein in the bloody German.
I always hold an avenue if you fancy it.
One you
shall be rest in.
There you go. That is a clip from the choral. It's the part where they realise that their old choir master is heading off to do his country's duty and fight in World War One. So they need a new choir master, and they're not too happy with Dr. Guthrie.
No. And the show actually starts, or the show rather, the movie is actually, it has a really nice premise and it's set up for success. But I do feel like it probably falls short in a lot of the things it's trying to talk about and a lot of the angles in which it goes through. As you rightly point out, obviously, it's set during the First World War, which is a nice change of pace because usually when we get historical dramas like this set around a war, it's always World War II.
Definitely.
So the choir master going away and then Dr. Henry Guthrie, who you've obviously pointed out is, at the time, would be an unideal candidate for a
he'd be grand now.
A choral group, is a homosexual atheist and obviously spent a number of years enjoying art in Germany, which, you know, who could fault him? obviously played by Ralph Fiennes, who many will know for his brilliant performance in Conclave last year. It's set up very much in the sense that it was described to me as whiplash for pensioners, which I agree with quite a bit, to be honest. It does feel like it scratches that itch.
So the choir master is quite vicious then, is he? He's quite a vicious...
It's not as bad as Whiplash, but there is obviously parts of it where he loses the rag because he's not the conventional choir master you'd have in this sort of setting. It has a lot of commentary, obviously, based around the war. And of course, the amount of losses. And obviously, it's impossible to escape the First World War when discussing something like this, because the whole reason that this movie even exists and the fact that this choral sort of dramas even beginning is because so many of the men have been enlisted into the First World War,
yeah.
and they're now struggling to find anyone that could even you know, take the reins and even join in the choir. So it means that they open it up to, I suppose, different classes, which is kind of an interesting conversation point, because a lot of the lads that come in would be considered these very high class people as being quite ruffian.
And different cultures as well, I see from the clips.
Yes, absolutely. So there's a lot of really interesting conversation pieces in here that I was expecting to be developed a lot more throughout the film, but then end up kind of being put to the wayside or being ignored completely, to be honest. The only real major conflict is between Guthrie, and initially it's the kind of the head of the choir at the time, Bernard Duxbury, played by Roger Allam.
Okay. This is written by Alan Bennett, and you'll know a lot of his plays have been adapted to really huge movies. I'm talking like The Madness of King George, History Boys, The Lady in the Van from about 10 years ago. See, they all have the same kind of British ilk about them. You know, it's very much, you know, celebrating all things that is British. So is this the kind of British Yorkshire spirit?
No, in the sense that it's kind of, it's very much a modern take, obviously, on anything related to the First and Second World Wars. Obviously, that every movie now attempts to be anti-war, which is another conversation in and of itself of whether that is successful or not, because there are elements of every war movie that I think suffer from propaganda. But this one has a couple of really important scenes that I think are really interesting. Obviously, the sense of these people have to pick this Agar piece to perform for the choral, because all of the other composers are of German descent.
Okay.
So they end up not wanting to ruffle any feathers with people in the community surrounding this. So it gets, you have a kind of an interesting background question of, you're dehumanizing an opposition so much to the point that their artists are considered, you know, taboo to talk about or even to represent.
Okay.
And there's an element of blind patriotism to it as well. There's one scene in the movie where one of the lads rushes in and proclaims that this German boat has been sunk, and there's massive applause and they all break into the national anthem, and Guthrie kind of says, if only you sang Edgar as much as you put your passion into singing the national anthem, which kind of, there's an added element for Guthrie because he lived in Germany and he knows one of the people that is serving in the naval fleet. So he holds quite a personal affection to this. But there is obviously questions around, you know, can you really stand on your moral high horse with a lot of these things, especially with Guthrie coming in and the vicar, who's a prominent member of the board for the choral, obviously questions his appointment and is very much against the whole idea. But there's some decent pieces in it. There's a lot of side stories which are interesting enough that are very Downton Abbey-esque in the sense that there's a love triangle between one of the
butler.
Well, no, not the butler in this case, but Jacob Dudman, who plays Clyde in the movie, he's gone off to war. His girlfriend back home, Bella, played by Emily Fearn, has been told that, you know, he's missing in action. So she's probably thinking, well, he's dead. She ends up striking up this relationship with Ellis, played by Taylor Utterly.
Okay.
And then as it turns out, here comes Clyde back home to see his beloved girlfriend who has moved on.
And did you see that coming?
Yeah, it is one of those things that you can kind of think, if you say somebody's missing in action in a war movie, it means that they're probably alive, to be honest. Unless it's a mother or an old person, I feel like. If it's a younger person, it always tends to be that, oh my God, they've come back. And that's
the
source
of conflict. Are you okay with that, though? Are you okay with the fact that you can kind of see it coming? Is it enjoyable enough that you can just...
If it's done well.
And was it done well?
I don't particularly think so, because there's a lot of scenes in this that kind of... I need to preface this scene before I talk about it, because it's very out of left field when it comes up. And I think if you told me this was going to happen in the movie when I went into it, I'd be like, you could have given me 100 years to guess this and I never would have gotten it. So there's a really ridiculous scene kind of later in the movie where Clyde meets up with Bella after she's already confirmed that she's going out with Ellis now and that that's their relationship and that she's really kind of hitched on him. But then what happens afterwards is completely ridiculous and something I can't describe on air at this time in the morning. But it's just there's scenes like that that come up and are never really addressed
and
again.
And they're just out of left field for the laughs.
Out of left field completely. Yeah. And even near the end of the movie, there's a sort of, like, there's more conversation around, you know, the justification of this war and sending off all these people. But then it's kind of overshadowed by these completely ridiculous scenes that kind of come out of nowhere and have me sitting kind of very uncomfortably in my seat being like, and I'm not a prude by any sense of the imagination, but like, the way in which it's broached and the way in which it's discussed about it, just, it's really just not done properly and it kind of comes out of left field. So it was set up for to be brilliant.
There was a lot of that in Downton Abbey, I have to say. You know, a lot of stories.
Well, then maybe
that,
if you're into Downton Abbey, you might enjoy this.
Yeah.
Then.
No, I think it would be a nice, easy afternoon for me. And I like a period drama like that. I like
and
a British drama as well.
I would say my aunt who went to see it absolutely adored it. Mm. So yeah, it's a very much Marmite movie, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Do you want a black pudding it?
Yeah, I don't want to sound repetitive, but last week I gave Wicked for Good a 5, and I think I'm going to give The Coral a 5 as well, because I just think I'll give it a 4. I don't think it's something that I would be like going out of my way to see. I'm not disappointed I would see it. I was in a solo theatre, so I got to experience it like that, and probably for the best, because if anyone else, actually probably wasn't for the best, because I would have wanted to have locked heads with someone else who'd seen it, okay, and be like, what did we just watch?
Mm.
I think it's a 4 for me. I just think the trailer makes it look extremely good.
Yes, I thought that.
It looks like it could be a very fun time, and there's moments of greatness throughout the movie. We're thinking, okay, now it's getting somewhere, yeah, and then it just falls flat at the end for me.
And so ends Ogden's stint on the movie reviews.
Thank God, says Orla.
The much more jolly Brian will be back next week. He gave us better points. 4 black puddings out of 10 for The Coral. See it at your own risk. So I think I'd love it, and Ogden thinks not. So that's what movies are all about. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Orla.
Good to see you for the last 2 weeks. Now off you go.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.